to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we visit together and maybe learn a little something from one another. I don't know what I'm learning from you, but I'm sure you're teaching me something. I love it. Humility, maybe. That's what it is. Because of you, friend, I will never get too full of myself. Oh, my friends, hello. You know, I've said it a million times. If you're going to praise, prepare for 5 minutes and speak for an hour. And if you're going to criticize, prepare for an hour and speak for 5 minutes. And because I'm going to do neither, I'm going to prepare for an hour and then speak for an hour. But then I'm not going to use that recording and I'm going to do it again without preparation. But since I've already done it once, have I not prepared in a way? Oh, friends come to me and they say, oh, Hardy, I'm not good at anything. I wish I was an expert at something. I'd mastered something in my life. And I say, I bet you have. I bet there's something you've done so many times, you are now good at it because you have rehearsed it over and over. Tell me about your day. Say, I wake up in the morning and I use the bathroom and I wipe my butt. And I say, wait a minute, you wipe your butt. You are an expert at that. So, all right, you are a master butt wiper. So, I'm hoping for something a little more glamorous and greater than that. Hey, we would all love to be a violin playing concert master. But some of us are good at other things like butt wiping. And you can put that down all you want. But, you know, not everybody can do it. And even the people that can do it, hey, most people don't do it well. If you ask any healthcare professional, they'll verify that. And you do. Oh, my goodness. Start making a list of all the things like that that you do well. Like I look at my dog and I think, I keep my food down for the most part. And he doesn't. You know, he's elderly and all, but so am I, in a way. My goodness. I think of how old I am. And then I think, how many in tortoise years is that, or something that's longer lived than me? If I were if I had an alien or its pet, they'd look at me and say, "Oh, look at it! It's really like, you know, a human year is like 50 of ours or something." I don't know. I'm not familiar with people on other planets and other cultures. My goodness, I have a hard enough time figuring out my own, but I love having my community. I tell people that are in my community and they give me a funny look, say, "I don't know who you are." I say, "Well, we're neighbors." They think, "I don't think we are." I go, "I mean it in the loosest sense." Oh my goodness. And that's how I'm your friend too, is that use that word in its loosest, not in its ironic sense. I'm not like a friend, like who's not really a friend or something. I won't mention that my grandmother used it as a euphemism and this month or something like that, she'd say. My goodness, I'm your friend and I'm your weekly friend. You get me weekly. Oh, I'm always here for you. How much good I can do? Well, I'll tell you what, I think I have the same effect as one of those pictures of a guru or saint or something that some people put up in their houses, put a little shrine. And say, "Oh, look at that. Who's the bearded fellow?" "Oh, that's..." And then they'll tell you a name. And you say, "That's meaningless to me." I say, "Well, I look at their visage, their face. And it inspires me. And I see compassion in their eyes because I'm making it up. I'm projecting. I don't know who they are." I have a picture of Thomas Merton like that. And he had really wonderful, creepy eyes. People used to say that, say, "Father Merton, your eyes are weirding me out. Crazy, nutty eyes." And he'd laugh. And then they'd talk about theology or even Eastern religion, everything, Thomas Merton. He was a, who was he? What are you talking about? Well, there was this fella what lived in Western Kentucky. I like to give all sorts of lessons, like I was Andy Griffith or something. So he's a monk who lived in Western Kentucky in a hermitage at the Gethsemane. I've talked about him. You talked about him last week. Why does he keep coming up? It's weird because if I brought it up and then a friend said, hey, I was just out at a retreat at Gethsemane. I said, that's really crazy. I feel like Thomas Merton is trying to tell me something. You know, get a colonoscopy. That's not how he died. But maybe colonoscopy. That's not how he died. But maybe he is giving me something just basic like that. You know, look behind you would be a great timely warning from a ghost. I don't know if they give that kind. But you hear stories like that. Say, oh, I thought I was about something bad was going to happen. I was going to make a bad business decision. And then I heard the ghost of my uncle go, excuse me? I guess if you're dead, here's my advice. Just go, no, or something that somebody can hear. If you try to put a sentence together, you know, I'm going to get some energy up and I'm going to talk to my living relatives from the grave. You know, because they can't understand you. And I'll tell you why. It's a dimensional thing. It's not your fault. Do you ever try to yell to somebody underwater? Well, that's just like the same thing as trying to shout to them from the grave. Now, a really good way to shout to somebody out of the grave is the way that Chateaubriand did it. Not the stake, my goodness. The nobleman and writer, 18th century, he did it with a autobiography. Now, that's a wonderful way of sharing with the world your life because you're not using it anymore. And so it's also okay to embellish because are you lying if you're dead? That I always thought about that because there's some lies, I think, in Chateaubriand's autobiography, and that's all right. And he calls it, it's called like Out of the Grave or Out of the Tomb or something. You know, now that I'm dead, I can say all this stuff because there's no repercussions. And I'm lying. Well, that's a great, my goodness, that's some good revenge. Is it, though? Do you need revenge? You can't savor it. So I'm going to be laughing and where? You know, where are you laughing from? So I like to do things while I'm here, and I'm not much of a revenge fella because of my memory. It's not so great. So I find holding a grudge is difficult for me because I forget to do it. It's the same thing when happens to job responsibilities. So I go, oh God, there's two things I gotta remember to do. I gotta hate Kevin, and then I gotta clean the both downstairs bathrooms. And then I'm do inventory. But see, that's the problem because I'm going, oh, all this, it slips my mind. I am a daydreamer. And sometimes I'm a day nightmarer, which is all just, you know. So you look, you're at a faraway place. Hard, I'll be sitting there real quietly, just kind of staring out to space, you know. And then I'll go, ah! And I'll go, oh, what are you doing? I had a day nightmare again. I'm sorry. What it is I fantasize about different things I want to do, and then I do it so accurately that I can see all the negatives, and I begin screaming, I've changed my mind. It's all like It's a Wonderful Life to me. You know, no, Clarence, I've decided I want things the way they were, or whatever. And so that's my message to you today. Do I always have to have a message? I think that about when I deliver things to people and I don't have anything. And they go, what are you doing? I go, I'm here. I'm a delivery service. And they say, what are you delivering? And I say, I don't have anything to deliver. Do I have to? And they go, sort of. And the same thing with being a messenger or a prophet. Say, I want to be a prophet. Say, well, what's your prediction? Oh, I don't know. I don't go that far. That's kind of crazy. I'm not a psychic. I'm just a prophet. Well, I feel there is a difference. So I think a psychic gets visions that just are beamed to them as if they were a radio receiver and they're seeing the future or something. But really, some people have examined this, and they think that prophets are really good at seeing consequences. Could you imagine that? Wouldn't that be wonderful if you could see the consequences of your actions just a few moves ahead? What'll happen if I scream at this fella in traffic? I bet nothing. Well, then you're not a prophet. I think that it, and then if you can warn others, say, hey, this collective behavior at ours is going to get us destroyed. You know, what collective behavior? Well, you know, where we're all burning tires indoors. You know, what's wrong with that? So that kind of thing. And he said, well, that doesn't seem, you don't have to be much of a prophet. And he goes, well, it depends how dumb your populace is. And I just remember that from Land of the Lost. You know, poor Enoch. And it's spelled different than Enoch in the Bible. One's Enoch, I think that's the Bible one. And Enoch is the fella in Land of the Lost. And now I know you get that. I get that confused with the Bible. People do that with Paradise Lost and the Bible. Did you know that? I think so. So in Paradise Lost, it's the story of Satan going to battle, having this battle in heaven with God, and then the becoming fallen angels, and this army of Satan descends. Really? Yes. That's in the Bible? I don't think that's Paradise Lost. Well, they're in both. I think it's Paradise Lost, though. All right. So I know Satan does pop up in the Bible a lot. Ha-Satan, it means the advocate. It's your lawyer. It's God's lawyer in Job. So that's the first thing when he persecutes Job. God says, I'm going to call my lawyer and ask him. And it's really the lawyer's idea. So you know what you ought to do. So that's why we say, oh, that, Satan's not so hot. But then you got a real estate dispute or something. Who's the first person you're going to call? Ha-Satan and Associates. Or whatever. You see them on the, nice, they have billboards. It's so crazy. There's always one. Oh, that should be a way of telling you something. A billboard lawyer. What kind of creature is that? Not a wonderful thing? They're going to speciate soon and not become that. Do you know what that is? So speciation, if you you don't have to believe in evolution. It's just these are things happen biologically. So you've got a couple species. And maybe members of that species become isolated from one another, or they deviate a lot. And so they start changes over time. And then those changes over time may get to the point where they can no longer breed with one another. They become two different species. That's speciation. And that little branch there, that it's not fast and finite, you know, it goes back and forth. It takes a while. Sometimes they can, then they can, then they can, then they can, then finally they can't at all. So it's a fuzzy crux there where that happens. But I really do. What are you getting at? I'm just saying that I think in the distant future, billboard lawyers will sort of like be their own species. And I don't know what that'll mean, whether they'll have feathers, or maybe their necks will be kind of different colors. They can puff them out or something. Accident, injury, billboard lawyer can help. And then they do a display with their throats and go, that fella's going to get me out of being sued. I know he is. And wouldn't it be interesting if we could cross a billboard lawyer with a gymnast or something who are now a different species as well? That'd be amazing. Oh, my goodness. You could just jump through hoops. That's how they get that expression. A lot of the things we say come from things that are going to happen in the future but haven't happened yet. And we think that about ring around the rosy, pocket full of posy, ashes all fall down. Now, what people think that means is the ring around the rosy is the sign you get when you got the plague or something. You go, uh-oh, what? Look at my rosy. Yeah? What is that around it? Is that a ring? Yeah. You got a ring around your rosy. Yeah. Oh, man, you better get some posies now. I guess that maybe that's to cover the stink of the dead bodies. Ashes, because then they got burned up all the plague victims. So, you know, should I get burned up now? I'd wait. Wait till you're either real sick or dead, and then, all right, I'm going to wait. Ashes also could mean maybe they would smoke a lot. Say, I'm dying of the plague. I don't care. I'm going to smoke again. And then that's where the ashes come from. and then the pocket full of posies. And I don't know. I don't know what that is all about. I've had flowers in my pocket before. So how'd this happen? A lot of times weddings, you go, what is this? And then you say, oh, it's a boutonniere or something. How long has that been there? I put it in my pocket after the wedding, and now it's, oh. They usually will dry out nicely. But sometimes, if it's an old polyester suit, it'll putrefy. And then stuff will grow in it. It's terrible. Back when suits used to be made of compressed compost, that would happen a lot. Things would grow. Say, hey, something's growing on your suit. And you go, I hope it's a flower, not a weed. I don't mind being a little different. Different from what? Than I was just a few minutes ago. I have changed over my lifetime. Oh my gosh. And it's not just my clothes or... I don't know whether it's evolving. I wouldn't call it that. And I don't know if evolving is evolving. A lot of times people, the mistake they make with evolution is the believing that there is a sort of alpha and omega, that there's a point to things, that it's change over time with the purpose of being really good at life. And that is not the case. It's good enough for a while. That's it. So that's strange. Good enough to do it again. Oh my gosh. That describes, is evolution like my career on WFMU in a way? You don't have to be great. You just have to be good enough to have that sustain. Look at that with alligators. So they haven't evolved much over time. That's because they got a niche. And there you go. There hasn't been a lot of pressure on. There has from... I guess Cajuns or whatever, but just otherwise there hasn't been a lot of pressure on them. And crocodilians in general attract people with hats, with like wide brim hats. I don't know what it is. And go and get some Crocs. Or now there's shoes. You go, that's a type of shoe, Hardy. I know, isn't that crazy? But are gators a type of shoe? I think they are too. Everything's a type of shoe. And it could be made into shoes. Don't do that. Oh, my goodness. Do we need animals for shoes? I'm not so sure. I don't know. I don't know what the things I have on now are made of gasoline. I believe there's sneakers, and all sneakers, I think, are made of gasoline or crude oil or something like that. I have mixed feelings because I think maybe your shoes ought to be, in a pinch, edible. And I got that idea from Charlie Chaplin, of whom I am not a huge fan. But in this one film, he ate his shoe. And you think, well, that's conceivable. If it was leather, it's just like beef jerky. I just had beef jerky at a fair, and it was home. You know, the kind of local business, we're making jerky, and you want to love it. You go, oh, please, it'd be good. And you taste it, and you go, oh. Did you find a cow or something? That's what it tastes like. You know, what happened is this. It's funny. Cow wandered in to my meemaw's room, and both of them perished, and we did not notice it. And they both became what we call TV mummies, and that is that somebody perishes, and they're watching television, and they desiccate in a wonderful way. There's no putrefaction. Just they dry out like... You know, like good leather, or a monk who's really done all the preparation of eating vegetarian and then eating hot rice or something. And they have dried out, and we found that cow, and we buried Meemaw, and we say, hey, the cow, we could just, let's cut it up, sell it. First of all, slather something on it, so like maybe some sriracha, some hick or something. Experiment with different sauces, package them up, print out the labels on our 90s printer, and then let's sell them at the fair and everything. Hardy will come by, he'll go, oh, I wish I could help you out, but it's repulsive. And then he'll move on, and he'll talk about something else. Oh, yes, he will. That's the way I am. I'm like, if radio were one of those food fair things. I'm trying to think what this is. It's a festival. It's a local food festival. I'm not going to say what it is. but there's like bands. I went to see a friend's band, and just my friend's band. You got to be, your timing's got to be so good because you don't want to insult anybody, but you definitely don't want to catch the ones before or afterwards. No one's that kind of music fan. And I was with a friend and said, well, music really unites the community. I said, no, it doesn't. No, the food does. The food, we are all here for the food. But these, not these bands. I mean, bless everybody, knows somebody in one. But it's for the, we're doing it for the musicians so they can feel included. But we don't need this. I love it. Love y'all. Bless y'all. And but we went to see our friends. And I don't, you end up, all it is really is you see your friends do their wonderful music, but in conditions that make them dehydrate. So I don't, I'd rather listen to their records so that they don't have to throw up afterwards. But these festivals right in the middle of summer, got to have them in summer. We're doing it. Where are we going to do it? I thought we should do it in Hell Fields, Fire Hell Fields. Oh, yeah, those are the city owns that property, doesn't it? Well, some of it, some of them are going to lease Fire Hell Fields. Why do they call it that? That big treeless expanse of, it's just hard, what is it, just limestone and some kind of metal in it so that it absorbs the heat. But it is, all these festivals are at place that geologically are very similar to a Florida car seat in the middle of summer. So I go, I don't know if I could walk on that. The sand's like that too. The first time I went to a beach where the sand was so hot that you felt like you were taking, it was like a, is this some kind of Tony Robbins course in emotion management or something? What's going to happen to me? My feet are burning. I go, yes, if you can walk, if you can do it, if you can get to the ocean, then you know you have leadership skills and you can invest in real estate, things like that. So I'm used to extremes when you're trying to have a good time. And that's why I don't mind if I burn your feet a little. Hardy, sometimes I think listening to you is like a trip to the beach, during which I got tar on me, my feet are burned, I feel sort of nauseous. Something washed up on the beach that made us all cognizant of the fact that we are not alone here and that the ocean, there's other things going on there. And that's a wonderful reminder. When there's a, you go to the beach and a carcass washes up, and it could be anything. Sometimes it has to do with, I'm not going to get into it, but things get beamed into the ocean from other worlds by mistake because they're trying to beam them to an island, and it is hard. It's like hitting a small target. I always think about that. There was a, one of the Olympics they started with a guy launched a flaming arrow to light the torch. And I think when I saw it was Muhammad Ali. I saw the Atlanta Olympics. But the flaming, and I think, well, God, you know, and he missed a few times. And he hit people, lit all sorts of things on fire, people, animals. It was sad. But he finally got that right on in the torch. You know, and it blows up like a I just saw it on YouTube. There's a cargo ship. There was an unmanned boat full of explosives headed towards it, like from pirates. And they shot it, and it blew up. And it was very similar to a scene in Godzilla Minus One where he shoots the landmine. I'm not giving anything away. Shoots the landmine. I know you've seen it. Godzilla Minus One. I can't do it. I can't do it. It makes me cough if I try to do the Godzilla voice. But you know, it's just, you know how they did it. So this is a funny thing. They got, it's a lion who's laughing so hard, he's starting to do that inhale laugh thing. And the next second he starts choking on lion saliva. But the lion's going, excuse me. And that's when they recorded that. And at the same, that was the same recording session where they rubbed a piano string with a key to get the TARDIS, the, I gotta take a drink of water. I just did something very bad to my vocal cords. It was reverse throat singing. Don't ever do that. Oh, there's two things that I saw as a child that were both choking incidents depicted on TV, and they both affected me very badly. One of them was an episode of Emergency with Gage and DeSoto, and someone had taken a tab can, and the tabs used to come off. They don't anymore because of this episode. But when you had a can of soda or beer or something, the tab used to come off, and you could either put it on the ground and Jimmy Buffett would step on it, or you could, a lot of times what they'd do is they put it in the can. They say, I'm going to put it in here. And then they drink it. Well, you know, 1 in 1,000, it comes right back in and gulp and goes down your throat and sticks in there. And that's what happened in this episode. Gage and DeSoto show up, person's choking on a can tab, and they got to make a tracheal trachectomy using a souvenir pen or something like that. And this traumatized me. And the other was when, in Disorder in the Court, when Mo inhales a little soprano harmonica. He's playing. And he inhales it. Then he's wheezing in, I don't know, C. I was thinking, I know not to put things in my mouth that aren't food or that are food, but that's too big. It's the size of the bolus is what they'll tell you. If the bolus is bigger than the throatus, then don't swallow us. You'll choke us. That's an old Latin thing. I have that on my license plate, but abbreviated. My friends, I can't help but help you help me try to help you. I was walking on the sidewalk to this festival the other day, and there was a young man walking next to somebody in front of me. Now, I was walking single file over towards the right because there's a lot of people, but they were walking two abreast, you know, taking up the whole sidewalk. And I couldn't help but eavesdrop because he was talking real loud and, you know, you're kind of close. And he was saying, I'm always tell this person at work, thank you, because they got me a job. And they said, you need to stop thanking me. And I said, I can't stop thanking you because I'm thankful and I'm just so grateful and thankful. And he just kept saying that. And then as he was walking by, he kind of forced these older couple off the sidewalk. And the man got real angry and said, try sharing the sidewalk sometime. And the fella never looked up and never noticed and just kept talking about how thankful he was. And now I felt like that was just for me. When that happens, I stop right where I am and I say, Lord, thank you for this. And I know this is my personal little television show, and I love it. It's like everything is, I think it should leave some days. And I can't tell you how grateful I am. And I hope that my gratitude doesn't blind me to the suffering of others. But boy, that's wonderful. It doesn't bother me a lot of times when human, as the kids would say, you just take a noun and you make it a verb. That's hardying. Or is it a gerund? I like to go hardying. I don't know which is which. I'm not a very good grammar person. But I know that I am also a verb. There was a book called God is a Verb. So really? Yes. Like I God, you God. Or is it? I don't know how to conjugate it. A hat gegogen, gegotten, I think is the German. But I feel like maybe I'm a verb too. And when I go to define myself, say, who are you, Hardy? What have you ever done? What are you? Are you a radio person's talking? And I go, yes, that's one. Are you an artist? Well, I don't know. Are you a poet? No, because you have to, you got to get a certification for that or something. Are you a musician? I go, well, I thought I was until the internet. Now I realize I'm not. And then all sorts of things like that. Say, I can't define myself. What noun am I? And then you have an identity problem. You might feel insignificant to others. I feel like I'm lesser than other humans. I don't have a specialty. I don't have a title. I don't have a job description. I don't have a profession. I go to parties to say, what do you do? And say, I get by, abide. And they move on to somebody else and say, well, I got stories. And they come back and they go, I'm lying. I don't have any stories. But then I thought this. What if I'm not a noun? What if I am another part of speech? Are you an article? Like the, I don't know. I don't think so. But Vicky has done some the videos. They're really good. But no, I'm not the, I may be a. That would be what my group is called, a. Or is it N-A? N-A? I'm not sure. An H? A H? Depends whether you're from the UK or not. Oh, my goodness. No, I think I am a verb. What kind of verb? You know, there's more than one. There's passive, active, intransigent, transient, aggravated, apoplectic verbs, whole series of them. And then there's all sorts of tenses. What tense are you? Oh, terribly. Extra tense is what I am. But there's all sorts. You could past perfect. People like to say pluperfect as for fun. They say, what the plu, or something like that. But that's got a meaning. So listen, what do you mean by you're a verb? Well, maybe I'm what I do. Maybe. Well, you just said you weren't what you do. No, I don't mean that. I mean, maybe there's no definition for who I am. Maybe I'm a phenomenon. Maybe you are too. Maybe I feel things, participate in things. Maybe I just exist. Isn't that enough? I got to figure it out on top of that? I don't think we have any obligation to figure out our existence. I think that's asking an awful lot. And I think it's very arrogant as a species to think, oh, you're going to know. We know. Poor little, I was looking the other day, I was looking at them ants and everything go by. Oh, and look at them ants, they don't know. Look at them, they just run around, they don't know what it's all about. And I know what it's all about because I was at church the other day and pastor said, just told me, so I know now. But see, you don't know now. And somebody's watching you. I think the crows are going, what are they doing? I'm just glad they produce so much garbage. And they laugh at us, and their crow laugh. I like when they do that. That means I want peanuts. My crows, we have a little relationship. And I think I'm known the children of the crows that I originally was feeding. They spend a long time in adolescence. They're like human. They're like American children. So, but they do. They spend a really long time in adolescence, so they kind of just live with their parents, I guess. But that doesn't mean they don't need peanuts or little chunks of cheese. And then they roost at night. You see them headed over to Kroger to roost or wherever they roost. I think they roost by the across from the mire or something. That used to be a forest. I think they go over there. So I see them at night, all the crows flying in one direction. Oh, my friends, we roost together. We need one another, don't you? In a way, I wish we couldn't tell each other apart. Then we go, well, there's the crows are going that way. But this way, when y'all wear like weird, no, I'm not going that way. Look at their shirts. Oh, yeah. What are those shirts made of? Rayon. I'm not going with the rayon-shirted humans. I will cast my lot over here with the cotton blends. Yes, you know it. So, you know, that's my wish. I do wish everything was just a little bit different. But hey, maybe it's all the way it's supposed to be, or maybe there's no supposed to. That's what I like to think. I think maybe supposed to, we're trying to think there's a reason, some kind of paranoid panic on our part. And you say, I got to know what's going on. Where are we? And she's just live, just go, just chill out. Just want to see what's all around. I got to know. What is this? What is this thing? It's a tree. Just be patient. We're going to explore and look around. We're going to get food. That's the kind of attitude that scares me.
Psst. Hey, buddy.
Yeah?
You, a little worried about things?
Yeah, I'm real worried about things. I'm scared of what is all this?
Well, I can let you know.
Yeah?
Yeah, for a small price.
I'll pay anything to know. Let me know what all is supposed to be, what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, I can straighten it all out for you. All of it out.
Straighten it?
Straighten it out. Straighten it out, all of it.
For me.
For you, buddy.
So beware. Beware. And that's why I believe that I show my love to you by acclimating you to the chaos of reality, which isn't really chaos. It just seems like chaos. But Dada seems like nonsense to you, but it's the music of the universe. All these things that seem unreal and surreal and all unrelated. They're not. They're all the way they should be. It's just that, my goodness, when they don't, it doesn't fit into something that you need to be, it becomes distracting. If you ever, I've talked to people all sorts of backgrounds and religious inclinations and knowledge and everything like that. And, so I know that a lot of people, there's things that other people think are information or true that really hurt others. You say, well, I believe that, the grass is a plant. And they go, no, it's not, or something. So somebody is going to, it's always somebody who your reality is an abomination to. That's interesting to me. So I'm not sure that should be. But I also believe it's because language creates just as many barriers as it tears down. So we think, I will now be able to communicate to somebody else because I got this word I can use. But boy, it can really backfire. And the words themselves can become an impediment to communication. You know that about Babel.
Do you mean Babel?
I had that. This is my... recreating my London discussion. Babel. Babylon. Babel, then. We're going to say Babel so we don't say Babel or Babel. Babel. We know that language may not be a way of uniting us all. My words can be as divisive as they are unifying. I say, I want to love my fellow human beings. I've got this opportunity to go on the radio and speak to people, and you can really connect to somebody through words and through stories. You can really have them feel what you are feeling. You can transmit feelings through art, and boy, especially words, I think, if you put them together right. If you really authentically put your true feelings into something, I believe they can be detected. So I try to do that. But I realize that sometimes the vehicle itself may be a problem. So I have something beautiful. I have a beautiful gift for you, let's say, and I put it in a box, and I think the box is clever and cleverly shaped, and you get it, and you say, oh no, this is a bad luck death box. And I didn't know that. I put something precious and sweet and heartfelt in it. I did not mean it to be destructive or hurtful or anything. So I'm also very suspicious when people say, if you don't make any enemies, you're not saying anything definitive. I mean, well, that may be, but you can make enemies by, being really clear, being unclear. I think it's really not even related to making any kind of stand about anything. I say something and I don't know whether it's true or not, and you take issue, and now we hate one another, but none of us are really sure of this thing that's dividing us. Oh, my goodness. It's all very confusing, a house of mirrors, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what makes it easier for me is being mad, being a part of that strangeness, just going full Alice and say, I'm going to walk into the world of Alice in Wonderland, this strange world inspired by a weird, I guess is weird dude's obsessions and maybe drugs. But regardless, it's a very, very good analogy to just the way we go through life. Who knows what these strange things are? And I've thought that when someone's speaking to me. Have you ever thought that? Somebody come to your door or something, they start speaking to you and say, I don't know if you're real or not. This just feels like a talking cat. And I read enough Russian literature where talking cats have been completely normalized for me. And, you know, there's a Master and Margarita reference in My Dinner with Andre. You know that, right? You know that, right? You know that Wallace talks about putting on the behemoth head. You know that, right? You know that's in there, right? You know that, right? Okay. I just want you to know that that is in there. Very interesting. A lot of Russian connections there. I knew this old routine, and I think it ended with fire engines are always Russian, and that's why fire engines are red. But I'm not going to do the whole thing. It's one of those old person vaudeville routine kind of jokes. I wish I knew one. Because when you the older you get, the more you can subject people to that, and they have to stand for it, especially if they're family. Papa's going to get up and do that long poem he does. It was a dark evening that summer. Everyone began to wonder. They saw the lights in heaven's souls of babes and lones of London. And then he goes, I wish I could, if I had improvised that. You were ready for it. Hardy's going to improvise a long poem. I wish I could do that. It wouldn't have been very good. I think I want to do something good for you. And I feel like if I just show you what's in my heart, I should have gone through my heart first. That's a problem, too. It's, come on in, let me show you around the house. Oh, I should have cleaned. What's this? Oh, I was trying to do something ill-conceived. I'm not going to do it again, but that's what this mess is. I don't know. But anything can be a pillow basically anything can be pillow filling was where I was coming from. But there's a lot of things that can't. And mostly things that are organic and that have a high moisture content. Organics, but rice, you can put rice in a pillow, be fine. Cook the rice, whole different ball game. Now the pillow's no good. And yet it's still a pillow, and you haven't done that much more. When I ever get one of these pillows that have the chopped up foam in it. So these pillows are better, they got chopped up foam. All right. I always cook it first, because you don't know. I cook it, and then it's no good. But I sterilize everything that comes into the house. I think if it can't withstand fire or boiling water, man, I don't want it. So I've got to be able to, when people come over, I use radiation. So I won't want to hurt them. But then you get all the germs off of everything. You can start fresh with them. Oh, my goodness. I'm both afraid and unafraid of life. I go back and forth between being brave and being cowardly. Sometimes I feel strong and sometimes I feel weak. Sometimes I feel like the captain and sometimes I feel buffeted about in the back of the boat like I'm in a dinghy. I'm in a little dinghy. I don't even know who I am. Maybe they don't know I'm here. Hey, it's Dinghy Guy. Y'all enjoying it up there? Captain, anything we should know about Dinghy Guy? That's my brother. So there's a fine line. Sometimes we're our captain. Sometimes we are dinghy boy. My goodness. And we all, sometimes we need a big hug. Sometimes we don't need a hug. Sometimes we want to give one. Sometimes we don't want anybody to touch us or even get within like 2 or 3 feet. That's fine, too. I can show support without grabbing you like you're a rag doll. I don't put my hands on people much. Just in general, it's uncomfortable for me. But some people I touch, it depends. I can sort of sense sometimes. So if you're people just are like forearm touchers or something like that, and that's fine. I understand that world. And I usually wait for you to reach out for my forearm. Sometimes when people do that, I withdraw and I go, "You're trying to steal my energy," like that. And then maybe they'll laugh, maybe not. I'm really used to my jokes not hitting. I've got a new set of neighbors, and I haven't said anything serious to them yet, and I know they're getting worried. I know they think I'm insane. And if I wasn't so committed to being a good neighbor, like I really try to look out for, like, I'm going to keep those trees trimmed. I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm going to go out of my way to try to make their life better as a neighbor, or certainly not make it worse. But I'm probably going to be a little bit on the Fred Willard side of incessantly jokey when I speak to them. Because on the very first meeting, their dog bit me. And I was cool about it, but now I feel like I'm just going to be really, really silly and weird from now on. I'm sorry, but that's the way it's going to be. And I think whatever you got to do to keep your balance in life, you got to have little internal plays. I have to do that all the time. I know it makes me sound like I'm insane or a child, but there are some things I have to do where I have to fantasize through the whole thing that I'm a character, or I'm visiting from another planet, or else I'll never get through it. Because there are just some realities that are too much to me. And so I think, yes, but I'm in my imagination, I'm so liberated, you know? And that goes on in this show, too. I pretend to be the person that I want to be. I can't tell you how much it means to me to be able to go on the radio like this and speak to you from beyond the grave. Hardy, you're not dead. I am. No, you're not. I will be. Are you dying? We all are. But also, this is recorded. I may be long dead. So I treat it like I already am. And then I'm saying things to you that only a dead person could say to you, because they've got no skin in the dog skin game anymore. I realize now all the foolish things that kept me from connecting with others, all the fears that were unnecessary. Now that I'm gone, I'm speaking to you from the 10th dimension. Is that where you go? I know, it's weirdly specific. Are you sure it's the 10th dimension? I know it's the 10th dimension because there's signs everywhere say 10th this, 10th that. It's crazy. They're so up their own butt here in the 10th dimension. Everything's named 10th something or other. Yeah, you can't escape it. Why? Well, that's all right. So I'm speaking to you from that without any concerns anymore. Say, I'm just be open. I'll just let my heart out. Oh, sometimes I felt so strong and superior. Like if I had an accomplishment and I did something well, you know, maybe everybody's laughing at me. Or maybe I've failed and everybody's laughing at me. It's so strange how those two reactions are the exact same. I really went into the wrong line of work. Because that, whether they hate you or love you, they laugh. The laugh is the point. You're really getting into sketchy territory. And I used to think that when I'd watch Lucille Ball. I'd think, look, they're laughing at Lucy because she's failing. But then she just won because they're laughing at her. But I mean, they're laughing at her. And I don't know, is that worth it? It seems like she had a stupid goal to begin with. And I said, well, at least they're laughing. Well, I mean, you know, what people laugh at. You can get hit in the privates and they laugh. You know, maybe have them laugh at themselves derisively. Maybe not. Have people, yes, have people, if you can get people to mock and bully themselves, I think that's already happening. My God, that's the last thing I want to happen is for you to bully yourself. So many people do that. It's so stupid. I know so many good, kind hearts, beautiful souls, so hard on themselves, past the point of any productivity. And I think it's out of desperation. So I don't know what to do. I'm frustrated and I blame me. Well, look, there's not two yous. So, oh, there's me. I hate myself. I must be two different people. No, you're just you in front of a mirror. You know, there's the you that you can't control. And that is a lot, you know? And I think you should realize that we are but driven leaves. And if you don't see the relentless flow of the river that is carrying you at a breakneck speed, if you don't see that as okay, as part of it, then it's going to feel like an insurmountable problem. But it isn't an insurmountable problem. It's the world in which we live. It's a rushing river. And we may be this small, gentle leaf, but the leaf gets to ride on the river. It's not battered by it. It gets to go along just like it were part of the water. It gets to float on the surface there. If it was larger, it might get bashed into the rocks and destroyed, but the leaf can survive even the waterfall. So if we go over that rapids, you're still okay. Embrace confusion. Is it that simple? So, oh man, two people are watching Twin Peaks, and one of them is in a state of confusion and despair, and the other one says, can't wait to see what happens next episode. And I'm telling you, be next episode Twin Peaks guy. Don't stress it. You are living in a crazy world, and I don't know, there's any figuring out. You know, you can recognize patterns, but patterns also change. It's just like, well, it's all prime numbers, isn't it? Yeah, figure that pattern out. Isn't it one? I don't know. You know? I feel like it's just, we're like pie. You know, it's infinite, different. But when I have my science show for you coming up soon, we're going to explore all that and say, hey, you know, maybe we can figure all this out. And I'm going to give you definitive answers that are neither correct nor incorrect. Isn't that wonderful? Because there is a sort of information that's not wrong or right. And I love that world. So we want to dwell there. Can't use it for a lot, you know? So it's like an imaginary toolbox. What are these tools for? They only work in the realm of imagination, but within it, they are incredibly useful. What are you talking about? You don't know? I think I do. I have it figured out. I bet you don't. Maybe you do. But gosh, it might be a different solution than I have come up with. Let's all look at the same story and get it all wrong. Rush them on your whole life. Even if you find yourself agreeing with someone, say, well, maybe I didn't. Maybe I saw it wrong. Maybe it was the lady that had the sword or something. I don't remember. I'm forgetting Rashomon. Oh, my goodness. I will go back and I will not read it, though, because I think the actual story Rashomon is not the Akutagawa. It's actually Akutagawa. Is that how you say it? You don't say the U. I'm having a little private conversation with myself about Japanese literature and film. I will be right back with you after these short messages. Hi, I'm Hardy White. Are you enjoying the show? If you like the show and you'd like to help out more, be inventive. Go get some paper and write down some crazy poetry. And now, throw it away. My goodness, you don't want to save it. That's like showing someone your stool. Just go ahead and throw it away. That's for your private enjoyment. There are some things that you might love that others don't, like noodling on the guitar. It brings me such pleasure, Hardy. Why can't other people hear it? Because it's your special Don Quixote magic helmet. Not everybody thinks that your wash basin is a magic helmet. That's for you. Say, well, I want a magic helmet that everybody thinks is a magic helmet. I want a poem that everybody thinks is genius. I want a song that'll make the whole world sing. I want to write a song in everything. But what if you could make something that made you feel that way?
Well, that would be deluded.
Would it, or would it be just the ultimate targeted art? Because I think sometimes is that you can make a beautiful dream or a paradise in yourself, and the mistake you make is showing it to someone else and wanting them to love it. And they don't always. And then you think, well, that means that I'm wrong. But it doesn't mean you were wrong. So, yes, there are people that can write a beautiful song and everybody thinks it's amazing. You say, Come on, Eileen. Wow. Or something. You know, everybody's going to think, this is an amazing song. Do another one like that. But sometimes it's not so obvious. And you might have make something that only you love. And maybe that something is also you. Maybe only you get you.
And nobody gets me.
So what? Nobody gets me. Nobody gets anybody, really, I don't think. But you can get yourself kind of, sort of, or become comfortable. Say, that's me. You know, it's easy if you're Raven, because you go, that's so Raven. But that's so Hardy doesn't have a ring to it. But it is, it's true. That's so Hardy. This sounds like Hardy. All the things I'm saying sound like Hardy White would say that. And that's how I gave up. My radio show is the result of me quitting. Giving up, because I would love to be. I'd love to be the most beloved radio personality ever. He's so funny. Nobody even comes close. Nobody has such command of the airwaves as this fella. He knows exactly how to use a microphone correctly. He does all the subtle things. Listen, is so articulate as well. I'd love that. It is not the case, but I still get to do a beautiful thing. And I still get to have a whole world. I'm still the center of my world, and you're the center of your world. And you bring all those centers together. And you have, I call it a center. Like, you know, you have like a fun center. Well, this is a center for centers. Add another layer of center, call it a center. And then what's that third layer of center? I don't know. We will find that. We will find it together. How many licks does it take, right? Like the old ad. How many you gonna bite on that candy? You're gonna either suck or bite was the first. That ad campaign didn't do as well as how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop. Because they would just go up to people on the street and go, suck or bite, like that. Because you can suck on the Tootsie Pop to get to the Tootsie Roll. Or you can just go, right, cut to the chase, as they say, and bite into it and get it. Now you got ground up candy shards in your smooth chocolate candy. So that's all I'm saying. But bless you so much. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, online, WFMU.org. Worldwide, did I say New York City? I think you're messing it up. I may be messing it up, but I think it's legal. I think I've legally said everything.
Rockland County?
Yeah. WMFU Mount Hope? I said that. WFMU East Orange? I said all that. All right. It's like the Lord's Prayer. Unless you start at the beginning, there's just no way to go in and, okay, take it from, forgive us your trespasses. I can't. Or is it debts? See, again, I don't know whether I'm in a Methodist church or a Presbyterian one. Oh, my friends, thank you for joining me. I am so blessed, as I said, to be with you every week. I think it's so wonderful. Good shows before, good shows after. I thank you, and I will see you again next week.
Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twin's name was 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 Ebony.
Thank you. Love. Yeah, you better believe it. Yeah. Love, love, love. On the idiot box, in the headline. Go ahead, they say. Love is the pulse of society. Finally, you say, okay. Later, you come too brokenhearted. Swearing to a lot of things, right? Anyway, like they say, love ain't the only L in the dictionary. They got some more, right? L like and learn, but you never do. There are plenty others too, right? L like and look down on the crowd, like you did when she was hanging on your arm. L like and left, like a beat up ship left in the storm. Like I suppose you feel now that she ain't around. No, you don't have to spell it out for me, baby. Anyhow, they always say, what will be, will be.